big audio project, 18 hours worth of audio to go through.
Like, go through, like, listening and, like, reviewing it, or, like...
We need to do a couple of things. We need to transcribe it.
Oh.
But it's not just, like, regular text. It's just, like, presentations from psychology. So it's like we have to look up the words and
you're just like, is that even a real word?
Yep, and that's exactly what our team member said this morning. I'm not sure if this is a real word, but I looked it up and it is a real word. So that's what we, she was in one room and I was working on a few podcasts in another room. The regular Monday.
Well, it must be exciting. I wish I could do this all the time. But, you know, have to have a real job. Real job.
I understand. What, you know, this didn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm. I do look forward to hearing how it happened. And, you know.
Yeah, let's see here what we can do.
My co-host couldn't join us, and she was like...
Yeah, I thought there was a co-host.
Yeah, she was like, I feel so bad about it. And I'm like, don't worry. I'm pretty sure that I can handle it. Like, especially considering Robin does this for a living.
Right.
She knows how to answer these questions.
I won't be all over the place. And yeah, I know how
But you know what, though? Sometimes like, those people who answer your question and go off in a tangent, and then they're like... Those are the best
better.
Answers.
Yeah, I was about to say, the tangent is better than the...
Yes.
The tangent is better than the actual answer. But let's talk about that, since you brought that up.
All right.
Blah, blah, blah. So, let's see. Turn my Bluetooth on. Went home for lunch. All right.
You went home for lunch, or you get to go home?
No, I went home for lunch. I'm back now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I leave my, I have a 3-year-old in preschool, so I go and pick him up and take him home. We have lunch together, and
aww.
Then I come back. At the afternoon shift, where I get my other girls.
That's so nice. I did already start recording, because that's just how
okay.
we do it.
Okay, all right. I understand.
But I'll edit it and, you know, tweak it if you don't. If there's something you don't want in there that we just said, that's what I thought you'd say. But
I had to say,
okay.
So I eat lunch.
We just me going, aww. But I do that a lot.
These are things that can stay.
All right. Well, Robin, thank you for joining me today. Since I know very little about you, I feel like I've read so many articles about the organization, but then I'm like,
cool.
I would like a little more meat about Robin. So do you mind telling me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I was born and raised in Detroit. I'm one of 5 generations Detroiters. Actually, my family originated from Birmingham, Alabama.
Really?
My grandfather came up here for the $5 a day at Ford. Typical black
family. I work at Ford.
Really? So we are typical. I'm on my 5th Ford because it was just ingrained in mm-hmm. me. That's what you do. You drive a Ford car. And I remember talking to my grandfather about, gosh, why do we have to buy Fords? Like, you've been there. You retire. It's over. Can I get something else? And he told me the story of the fact that Ford was the only place that would hire him mm-hmm. as a black man. So that really... That stuck with me, and I was like, gosh, you know, they were really committed to my family, and that really started our whole trajectory of being Detroiters, being able to buy a home and, you know, live this middle class life that we wouldn't have been able to live, you know, in the South. And so I was like, that's why I drive a Ford.
It's as good a reason as any, I guess.
Yeah, so that was in the 1950s, and, you know, I born and raised here, attended Michigan State. My undergrad is in human resource management.
Mm.
Nothing related to what I'm doing right now, but that's another story. I stayed at Michigan State and actually got my first full-time job there. I was one of their admissions counselors. So
oh, really?
I got the fun job of traveling to recruits. And so being 21, 22 and going to New York and going to Chicago and Atlanta.
I can only imagine.
Oh, it was so much fun. It was so much fun. But after 4 years, I was a little burned out from living out of a suitcase and got homesick. Moved back to Detroit. And I've always had a commitment to serving others. So I actually started as an AmeriCorps intern and wanted to work at just a, you know, community development. Jobs was an intern through AmeriCorps. And I was helping small businesses grow, basically. So do they need new signage? Do they need updated marketing strategy? Do they need a meter removed because they are hair salon? So I would work with the businesses along the business district and love that and made a career out of that. And one day found my calling. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I have a mom to three. And, you know, we all are a very music-based. They're here a lot. Here at the studio, they're every time they're here, they go straight to the microphones to talk. But in general, you know, finding my calling, I would say later in life. After having a career, I think that all sprinkles into what Motor City Woman is all about.
Yeah. I definitely think that people have this idea that you have to have it figured out right away. And, I mean, I just got, like, my first full-time job. And, like, when she asked me, oh, where do you see yourself in a couple of years? I said, I was like, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And she laughed. And I think she laughed because it's an honest answer and because people can relate to that.
Yeah.
Because so many of us are like, this is great. But, like, where do I want to be? Well, I don't know where I want to be.
I don't know. You know, I went to Michigan State because of their veterinary medicine program.
Oh, really?
I was a pre-vet major coming out of high school. I've always loved animals. And I still love animals. But I think after that second chemistry class, I realized that you can love animals and not necessarily want to be a veterinarian. And the true sticking point was I was interning at a vet clinic. And this dog came in with a fountain of blood coming out of his like rib cage. He had ran into a tree in the tree, and they had to get the tree. But oh, it was a mess. I fainted, and it's just one of those things. Like it's like the vet was like, I don't think you're cut out to do this. I think you could volunteer, maybe help us walk the dog.
You're like, deal.
Yep, and that's exactly how it happened.
Oh my god.
So you don't know.
No.
You're evolving. I think we're all evolving, and I think that's why people are put so much pressure on themselves, because you think that, oh, I need to have this figured out by 22. I need to be married by this. I need to have kids by this. No.
Yeah, I always think that like this, it's my critique of like colleges in general.
Yeah.
And because it's really great that you had this experience that you could be like, okay, great. I don't want to do that. But I think a lot of people don't. Like, I made it all the way through my undergrad thinking, oh, I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a lawyer. Until I did my internship at like, the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Oh, dear.
And it wasn't that, like, the people were mean or, like, the work or anything case. And I spent, and I watched them all, like, take it in. And I watched them, all that work basically get thrown in the trash can. And I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I have no desire to do this. And I think that it would help if, you know, colleges forced students to, like, do these experiences.
Yeah,
even if
I
it's
agree.
Just shadowing for a couple of days.
I agree.
So that you know.
Because
you know,
then you're like, nah, I thought I wanted to do this. I don't want to do this. I'm not cut out to do this. Or, like me, I still, you know, like volunteering at clinics and things. But that doesn't mean that that's my career and I want to do it every day, all day.
Right. Right. Agreed. So, you sort of started to touch on it, but what made you want to start Motor City Woman?
Well, that goes back to how it all started.
Sorry, we've got time, so you can.
Okay, so growing up, I was always an avid talk radio listener because my mother listened to talk radio, because her mother listened to talk radio. So I have very fine memories of being in the back of my mother's red Ford Tempo. I remember like it was yesterday because I actually crashed it in high school. That's another story.
Well, I'd like to hear that one.
Oh, God. It was terrible. Oh, I was so shaken. And she was so calm because I was like, oh, my God, I got to call my mom. She's going to kill me. Nope. She was, are you okay? Okay. But I remember listening to Martha Jean the Queen. So if you don't know who Martha Jean the Queen is, you should definitely look her up. Martha Jean the Queen was, I want to say, in this market, for sure, the first black woman to not only host a show, a radio show, but she also owned the radio station, which was unheard of. She is a pioneer in radio in the country. So growing up listening to Martha Jean the Queen, who would interview everyone from the mayor to community activists, she gave inspiration. She was just someone who was a constant in my life, you know, and hearing her and the power that she had and the, how people respected her. But she was also, you know, just full of wisdom. And as I grew older, went away to school, and was continuing to listening to her episodes because she was so popular that even after she passed, they continued playing old episodes. That's how popular she was. So I would listen to old episodes after I graduated college and she had passed. So after I started my career, I remember being at my desk listening to talk radio, and I couldn't find programming that was not only geared towards women, but the conversation was led by a woman. And it wasn't like something trivial. It wasn't like gossip. It wasn't something. It wasn't Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It was just a conversation of, you know, a random topic led by a woman. I couldn't find it. I could not find it. And so I was part of this planning committee for this event. And the co-chair was being interviewed on the radio. And she called me and said she wasn't feeling well and I needed to go do the radio interview. And I was petrified. I had never been on the radio before. Well, that's not true. I was a host at a radio show in high school. Okay. So my mother would listen. So she said, oh, you need to go down here. And it was like Radio 1. So this huge market, you need to go and get interviewed for this event. And I was like, oh, are you sure? I don't know. She's like, you're fine. You go do it. So I did it, loved it. I'm walking out and one of the radio executives comes up to me and says, hey, have you ever thought about having your own radio show? And I was like, no. And totally forgot about it. Kept going. Well, he continued to follow up with me. Well, what would you talk about if you did have your own radio show? And he just kept, I mean, this is like a 6-month gap here. And so we launched the Motor City Woman Radio Show in 2015. And I would, you know, talk to women about being an entrepreneur, just general highlighting women in the community. So this is like pre a lot of this, the second coming of the women's movement that we're in right now, which is awesome. But at that time, no one was really applauding, highlighting, shining a light on women. And so we had a 30-minute show that came on Sunday afternoons, and it just breathed life into me. I loved it so, so much. But after doing it for a few months, I just realized that it was bigger than me, and there was other voices that needed to be heard and not just mine. And I'm married to an audio engineer. So I went home to my husband and said, what would it look like for us to have our own radio station? And that kind of planted the seed for, you know, well, what would you want to talk about? What type of shows would you want to talk about? So we started small. We leased time at a recording studio by the hour because that's what we could afford at the time. I was still working full time, as was my husband. And I thought, oh, we will organically outgrow this space in like a year or so. You know, we'll still be working. I was expecting my third child at the time. No problem. Within, I would say, 2 months, we needed to move because we were taking up too much time at the recording studio other clients. So it forced us. And I think that if we wouldn't have been forced to do that, we would have been like, oh, this is comfortable. You know, we're growing. People are listening. Yada, yada, yada. And we're like, no, this isn't going to work. You guys need to find a new space. I'm like 8 months pregnant by this point. And oh so we're dry. I'm supposed to be on bed rest. And, you know, if my doctor's listening, I was on bed rest. So we're driving around. Right. Right. My husband was driving me around. And we were looking for a space to have our studio. And a lot of the office buildings don't want a radio station because they think we're going to be loud. Hmm. So a lot of the places were like, now, what do you want to do? Or they think it's going to be a lot of traffic, a lot of noise. And where we're located now was the only place that said yes.
Oh, really?
The only place that said yes. And allowed us to customize everything, like these cutouts that you see, the sound panels, the wiring, everything is custom. And so that started the next phase, because we launched in 2016 from this location with, I want to say, 4 shows in the digital radio space. And at that time, we weren't doing audiobooks. We weren't really doing podcasts. And we were still really just the digital radio part. And so everything has just evolved from there. Now that we had our own space, we're like, okay, so now what do we do?
Right.
We got our own space that we can control. And as people would contact us and ask us, can you do this? My answer was always yes, and I'll figure it out later. So that's mm-hmm. how our service offerings have grown over the years, you know, as we continue to challenge ourselves and continue to see, okay, well, what is it that our customer wants, needs, and how can we make this easier for people to utilize our services?
I did notice, because I was, like, scrolling through, and I, like, listened to a couple of episodes, and I feel like I just, like, picked between different shows, because okay. I just, like, searched, like, based on, like, topic on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, how do, like, they come to you and say, I would like to do a show on this? Like, is that how it works?
Yep. So, pretty much, people can contact us and say, I would like to be part of the radio network, or I would like to do a special project like a podcast, audiobook, voiceover. So for the radio part, you know, people contact us and we look at the time that they're looking for. So if they say, I want my show to come on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock, if we already have a Wednesday at 10 o'clock show, then they have to look somewhere else. But typically we get approached with the type of show that they want to have, the length of the show, who their target market is, and then we kind of see if that's a fit for, you know, the radio network in general.
So you said that you didn't really notice. I mean, I'm sure I know the answer to this.
Okay.
But, like, I think it's important for people to hear it.
Okay.
As far as, why do you think it's so important for women, and specifically you, like, growing up, to hear women like you, to hear women like me, for us women to hear each other on the radio instead of, you know, the same sexist dialogue that we hear so frequently on morning radio?
Well, you know, it just goes back to you can't be what you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading somewhere that the ears and your hearing is the first thing that you develop as a child
oh.
in the womb. So that's why you have doctors who are saying, you know, put headphones, blah, blah, blah. And I think that we all have this innate craving to, you know, to hear things that are pleasing, you know, to the ear. So, you know, growing up, and, you know, for me, it was Martha Jean the Queen, but for the next generation, who is it? You know, now, thankfully, we have more women on TV. We have mm-hmm. more women, you know, on the air, but, you know, I still think there is a gap. There's a mm-hmm. huge gap. And, you know, we didn't know this initially when we first started, but, you know, as the radio station and everything continued to evolve, I had a hard time finding women to be audio engineers
mm.
to actually work here. So that was another issue that came up. So I would go to different events with my husband, like, you know, a speaker manufacturer workshop or something, and I was typically the only woman there, and certainly the only woman of color there. And there's a organization out of California called Song Girls. And we reached out to Song Girls, like, gosh, we would love to have something like that here. And of course, the founder, Carrie Key, says, oh, would you like to lead it? And my, you know, my response is always yes. Sure, there's a need for it. You know, I think that this is something that could really grow in the Detroit area. So we launched the Detroit chapter of Sound Girls in 2016. Since then, we do different workshops and really just trying to cultivate what we call the next generation of audio engineers. So we really try to be intentional with our team members here. I wouldn't say, of course, that we only hire
right.
women, but a lot of the community and the outreach and things of that nature is geared towards women and girls in audio engineering and STEM overall.
Yeah, I think when Ray, my co-host, and I, when we started the podcast, mm-hmm. we definitely started it because we wanted to hear people like us having this sort of thing, because mm-hmm. we're like, well, we're the students, because it's always the well-respected historians, but the students are the ones doing the new research, you know, and then when it comes down to picking hosts, we have this amazing capacity to always gear towards women, and we're trying to be better about it, but it's just that we are, like, we're like, oh, we love these strong women, let's get them on the show, and right. I think, do you listen to Armchair Expert?
I don't listen to it, but I know it.
Okay. Well, and like, so I listened to it, and one of the things that the host was saying is, he's like, you know, I ask women to be in here all the time. And he's like, and I ask different people, but it's always the white men who say yes right away. Mm-hmm. And it's always the women and the people of color who are like, I don't really know if I have anything to add.
Am I qualified? Right. I don't have enough experience.
Right. And it's like, it's where did we develop this along the way where we don't feel like we have, like, the ability or, like, that we should speak up, mm-hmm. and I think that that's something that I'm always thinking about, is mm-hmm. like, where did this shift happen, and mm-hmm. what can we do to fight against it?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of components to that, how it's ingrained in us for women to undervalue ourselves, mm-hmm. and, you know, men on the opposite end of the spectrum mm-hmm. are puffing themselves up. That's like, I was at an event, and the speaker said that, you know, if there's a job posted, if women only qualify for 90% of the job, we won't apply for it. But if men only qualify for 70% of it, oh, I can figure the rest out.
I believe it.
It's a mindset, and where does that come from? A lot of different segments. It comes from, I think, ingrained in previous generations. It can come from the media saying that this is what success looks like for you. You know, if you're a woman, are you married? If you're not married, why aren't you married? What are mm-hmm. you waiting for? With men, no one's asking them, well, why aren't you married yet?
Like, yeah.
You know, it doesn't even come up. And actually, there was a elected official, and she was saying, I'm tired of people asking me who's caring for my children yes. as I run for office. There's two of us. I did not make them by myself. No one asked the men.
No, of course not.
Who's caring for your children?
Right. Right.
You know, so there's so many different factors that go into that. Oh, well, I'm not sure. I'm like, well, what's the worst that could happen?
Exactly.
Well, you know, they say, no, you know what? You suck at this. Oh, okay. Well, I figured out I'm not good at that. Let me look at some mm-hmm. other stuff. But I think it takes a confidence, and it takes a internal self-value of, if this doesn't work, something else will, and I'll be okay either way.
I do think that that's really interesting, that it's just, I mean, and I don't know why it is, and it bothers me so much
yeah,
that it's always the women things. Who are like, I don't think I have anything to add, and it's just like, I will shake you till you realize you have so much to add.
Have you read Becoming by Michelle Obama?
No, I haven't, though.
Okay, so.
Is it exactly what we're talking about?
Okay, so in Becoming, this is just a slither of it. So she's talking about, not in the Becoming, but she was being interviewed from Becoming by Oprah. And Oprah was saying that, gosh, you know, you've now been in the room with all these great men. You know, you're sitting here in the White House. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how is it that you kind of have that confidence sitting at these huge tables? And Michelle Obama said, you know, you come to realize when you start really interacting with some people that they're not that smart. And I just thought that was so interesting, that it's just a title
yes.
that someone has given them, and that they're just trying to figure this stuff out. You know, they have a whole team of people who's going to break it down for them. And that's not to say generally that all men are not smart. That's not what I'm saying. But she was saying that don't be intimidated by the title, or that, you know, oh my gosh, I don't have a general in front of my name, or I don't have this in front of my name, I don't have Esquire. Like, no, I have something to contribute, even if it's just bringing up a question that someone else in the room mm-hmm. wants to bring up, but unafraid to.
Right, or if, like, I think that, like, my sister just called me the other day, and she got nominated for promotion at her job.
Yeah.
And she's, like, the epitome of what we're talking about right now. And she's just like, I don't see why they think that I'm...
Wow.
And she's like, I need you to, like, tell me why why I got nominated for this thing. And I'm like...
Are you kidding me?
Well, exactly. And I was like, look, it doesn't matter if you see it. They see it. I was like, and that's what matters, too. And I was like, and second... she was like, I don't know half the stuff. And I'm like, you have something that yeah, you can't
evidently
teach. Well, she thinks outside of the box because my sister is, she's legally deaf. And mm-hmm. so, like, her whole life she's had hearing aids and she's had to, like, deal with things differently than other people. And I'm like, you see things differently.
She's probably, yep, very creative, mm-hmm. resourceful.
Yep. And I was like, and that's what you have. And you can't teach that. I was like, and that's why you're getting nominated for this that's promotion. Awesome. I was like, that's what it is. And she's
now
just like,
now go out there.
I was like, now you go out there and learn what you don't know so that they can, so that you can get promoted. And she was like, okay. And I was okay. like, that's right. Get out there. Go do it.
I know. It's so ingrained, though.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, the gender stereotypes, yes. too. I was forcing my kids to watch, it wasn't Wonder Woman. It was one of the Marvel movies.
The Captain Marvel?
I don't remember. Well, I was just forcing them to watch something, and my 7-year-old was like, this is for boys. And I'm like, no, there's girls in this movie, you know. And, you know, girls can do anything that a boy can do. So it's like, it's that type of talk that I have to constantly say because, mm-hmm. you know, when they're looking at cartoons or something, they're not seeing those roles as often. You know, I've seen some cartoons kind of go against the grain. Now I'm like, all right, Doc McStuffins, I see you. You know, the mom works outside the home and the dad stays at home. I was like, all right, this is different. But in general, it's something that I think we all have to be intentional about.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I had an example in my head, and then it totally... since Disney Plus is coming out.
Yes,
and,
so excited about that.
Well, Kim Possible coming on it, because when I was growing up, she was, like, the person that girls could be, because her guy friend was the dopey sidekick, uh-huh. and he didn't have any of the answers, and she yeah. was all of those things.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, Disney lost it at that point, and so I'm telling all my friends who have young kids now,
support
I'm like,
Kim
like sit them kids down and watch Kim Possible so that they can see that strong woman on the screen.
And it doesn't... And also, I can't remember the campaign. It doesn't take from the femininity.
Right.
Either. It doesn't have to be an either or, you know, you can be strong and like physically strong, mm-hmm. mentally tough, and also like tea parties. And I think that's the challenge. I know that is for me as a mother. That's the challenge right now, is that it doesn't have to be one or the other, that you can be both. And you can define what strong is.
Right. So, going back to, I guess, Motor City Woman, since I guess that's what we'll talk about. Just kidding. what do you hope that people take away from Motor City Woman, from the project, from all of your effort? Like, what do you hope people get out of it?
Well, even in the beginning, we've always been intentional about Motor City Woman being accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And what we say in our tagline is produce media that matters.
Mm-hmm.
So something that would have normally not have been produced can be made here, that we see value in it. And we've tried to stay away from being simply transactional, but mm-hmm. that we want to be a community. And, you know, we're proud of everything that has come out of this studio. And, you know, our overall goal is that people will walk away saying that, you know, I was heard at Motor City Woman. You know, I felt welcomed and not only welcomed and heard, but celebrated that we all have something to say and that is all of value. You know, that's really what Motor City Woman Studios has been about. Like, if I just wanted to have a recording studio and crank out stuff.
Right.
You know, I could do that, but, you know, we were really, even when we have people that contact us, there's some times where I'll say, I don't think this is the best fit for you, just because, like, I'm really big into energy. Like, I have
yeah.
family pictures on the wall, so I have the energy of my great-grandmother in this space. And, you know, it's not just me, you know, this is a legacy, you know, I'm hoping that this will resonate for many years to come, and that's why I'm hoping that people will walk away. You know, once they come here.
Yeah, I was listening to an episode on white privilege, and it was the interviewer, and I can't remember which show it was on, but she was interviewing a professor in Canada, and
okay.
they were talking about how they were saying that racism doesn't exist in Canada. And okay. I was thinking, like you were just saying, about how where else could this conversation exist if, like, this platform hadn't been created to make it so that this conversation
could be had. Well, podcasting changed the game.
Yes.
Podcasting changed the game. And what I love about podcasting is that it's all equal. Mm-hmm. It's all equal. Although you may think, oh, if you have a celebrity podcast. No, they go through the same process. Right. They have to upload it to Apple and Spotify. It's just that they have a larger audience, of course. But you have the same opportunities as everyone else when it comes to podcasts. No one is filtering a podcast. There's no type of FCC yet. I think that it will be regulated. I'll go on record saying that I think that podcasting will be regulated sooner or later. But for right now, everyone has a voice, everyone has an opinion, and everyone, you know, has the same access when it comes mm-hmm. to podcasting. I think that's what I love about it the most. It's like equal opportunity media.
Yeah. Well, I just thought it was, like, amazing. I'm sure, I think it was one of the radio shows, because I was looking and I was like, oh, that's... But, and so I imagine it took place on air, but it's just, I was, like, listening to it on mm-hmm. podcast, because where I work. I don't get the Wi-Fi where I work, so I have to download everything ahead of time.
Oh, and then, like, listen to it.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sort of, I guess, going back, because you brought it up already, but I wanted to sort of go back to it, like, you're the getting girls involved in audio engineering. Why do you think that that's so important?
Well, it's all about representation. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to, you know, you can't be what you can't see. And if we want to have a diversity of projects, you know, you need that on the mic and behind the board. So you can't just have it one way or the other, because, you know, studies have shown that men and women hear differently. Mm. You know, that let's say I'm editing something. There's something that I may pick up on that, you know, my male counterpart may not pick up on. And so having that diversity of genders when it comes to editing is important, I think, to a project and important to a lens. You know, for example, you know, one of my sheroes is Ava DuVernay. And so her lens, when she's looking at a project, I'm sure is different from someone who is, you know, is not a woman, is that they're going to look at something different. She may zero in on something that someone else
right.
may miss. So having that, all those different viewpoints and lenses is important, because then the final product is the audience seeing something like, oh my gosh, that's what I would have zeroed in on too. Mm-hmm. But that may have been overlooked if it wasn't, you know, her specifically. I thought she's a genius in general.
So true.
Yeah, she's a genius in general, but I think that's why it's important to have women behind the scenes as well mm-hmm. as on the mic, and that's what we've tried to do both here.
So you created Motor City Woman, and what advice would you give to young women who, or anyone, I guess, in general, but specifically young women, because, mm-hmm. you know, that's what we care about.
Yeah.
What advice would you give them who are, like, starting their own business or, you know, deciding, well, I really want to do this, but I'm scared, or, like, you know, I don't, like, it's my dream, but I don't know if I want to jump and take that step?
Well, the fear's not going to go away. So saying that, you know, I'm scared, I'm not going to do it, either you want it or you don't. And I love yoga. And yoga has really helped me as an entrepreneur. And, you know, one of the practices that I've learned through yoga is kind of feeling something, processing it, and not fighting against it. So let's say you're in a difficult pose. So instead of doing like that, releasing that tension and really kind of, like, you know, holding it as much as you can. But, and if you're pushing yourself too far, just kind of bringing it back a little bit. And I compare that to entrepreneurship when, like, right now I'm going into my fifth year. I still feel fear, you know, when we're doing something new or we have a new opportunity. Are we ready for this? Am I ready for this? You know, I still have those types of questions. But, you know, when you have the internal, I guess, the internal faith and confidence of, even if this does fail, I'm going to be okay. And if it does fail, I'm not only am I going to be okay, but that has failed to serve me, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, everything that is happening to me is happening for me type of thing. So that's my advice for any woman that's considering entrepreneurship, is you're going to feel that fear, but you have to harness that fear of, like, okay, what is this fear telling me? Am I not prepared enough? Maybe I need to prepare a little bit more in order to get over this. But the fear is not going to go anyway. You just have to show up and do the best that you can and see what happens.
I think that that's something, too, that, like, people always have this idea that because you failed, like, that it's over. And right. It's like, no, you just pick yourself back up. Because if you fall, what do? You don't right. just lay on the there. Ground forever. Like,
well, I compare it to, and this is years ago, I don't know what book I was reading, but they were talking about, you know, when a baby is first learning to mm-hmm. walk, they fall, they get back up, they fall, they get back up, blah, blah. At no point does a baby say, you know what, I don't think this walking thing's for me, I'm just going to keep crawling. Eventually, they are going to walk. It is in us to succeed, but you have to believe that. There's only so much that someone else can say to you. It's like, either you know, okay, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I've been called to do, or not. And, you know, that fear and that failure is just coming to teach you a lesson of, mm-hmm. okay, well, I know that doesn't work. Now let me go try something else.
I think, though, too, like, sometimes the fear or, like, the hesitation can also be a sign that maybe that's not what you should be doing. Because yeah. if you're sure, like, that something is, like, you know, that you want it, like, I'm scared of a lot of things, but, like, usually those are the things I really want, and that's why I'm scared. Mm. And, like, for example, I don't like public speaking. Yeah. I really don't like giving presentations, but I do it all the time because I want to not be scared yeah. to do it. And so everyone's like, well, you must really love doing it. And it's like, no. I get huge amounts of anxiety, but I know that if I want it, I have to make myself do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that people should carry with them, is it's just like, if you want it, do it. Because, you know, I'm nervous up to the minute I start, and then once I'm in it, I'm
yeah
gone.
You know your stuff, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, you're comfortable, and but I'm sure you've prepared, mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, I know what I'm talking about, I know my subject area, I'm not up here winging it. You know, so that fear, and you kind of, you know, hands get clammy and all that, your speech kind of speeds up a bit, but you're like, okay, I got this.
Right. So where do you see Motor City Woman in, like, the next 5 years or in the next 10 years, or where do you hope it goes?
Well, my goal is the same as when we first started. It was to be in media production in general. So our overall goal is to have our own campus where we're mm-hmm. not only producing audio but also video. We want to roll out audio engineering classes because mm-hmm. we saw that was a big mm-hmm. gap of people who wanted to learn how to produce, and maybe they want to produce music, maybe they're working on a video or some sort of audio project, but they want to learn how to edit it. So that's another segment. So we can see ourselves having an entire campus where we're offering all these different elements of media production where people can come and learn and test things out. I would love to incorporate youth, and mm-hmm. I could see all those things very clearly.
Well, that's amazing. I think that it's great that you have such a clear path of where you want to go.
That's the vision that I have. You know, I believe that all the resources that I need will come in the time that they need to come.
I think that that's true, and I think that, like you said, I think you could appeal to community colleges really easily by saying, you know, I've started this organization to attract women into mm-hmm. audio engineering. Why don't you help me attract women into audio engineering? Because even if it's just like a generic, like, liberal course, like, I would totally have taken that in, like, when I was in college, and I'm sure you feel the same
yeah.
way. That if you were like, oh, this door is open to
right.
me, I will, of course,
yeah, I'll do
open
it.
This door. Yeah,
I agree.
All right, so we usually wrap up by asking, what book are you currently reading?
Okay.
And what TV show are you currently binge-watching?
Okay.
Or if there's just a book in general you want to recommend, or a TV show. You
okay.
can do that, too.
Well, I was just in South Carolina. I had to go to South Carolina to work on a project at Benedict College. And during that time, I was reading It was a book called Do Less. I think it was like the mother's guide to doing less or something. It was awesome.
I fully support
this. I loved it. You know, it just really taught me about, you know, focusing on what matters as a mom, as, you know, as a mom that works outside of the home. And just a mom in general, because moms that work inside the home, I think, work twice as hard. Oh, yeah. Because the expectation of, well, you've been here all day, the house should be spotless, which is absurd. But also, I've been reading Kendra Hall's Stories That Stick. That book is about storytelling. And because that's one of the elements that, you know, when we're, let's say, working with a client or we're consulting on a project and they want to know, a brand wants to learn how to tell their story in an authentic way. That book really helped me and really got me organized. So those are the two books that I've been reading. I'm always reading at least two books at a time. At all.
I understand.
I'm switching. Completely. It takes me months, but that's just how it goes. What am I watching right now? You know, I don't watch a lot of TV. It's mm-hmm. just I can't find anything that really gets me excited. I actually watch a lot of concerts. I watch a lot of music-based.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I watch a lot of, because I love having music on at home. So, like, Friday night, there was concert of Justin Timberlake on Netflix. I just had that blasting, and you know, that's what was on TV. But gosh, TV shows, I really have to think about that. Something on a regular basis.
Or you could just say the last thing that captivated you.
The last thing on TV that captivated me, you know what? What really captivated me was a documentary about Quincy Jones that my husband and I watched. A lot of things that I thought I knew about Quincy Jones that I did not know about Quincy Jones. It was just simply called Quincy. It's on Netflix. And it just, I think one of his daughters produced it. And he just reflects on his life and, you know, getting into the music industry rather young as a teenager, working with Frank Sinatra, working with, like, all these greats, not only just in the United States, but, you know, across the world, and, you know, kind of some of the obstacles that he overcame. But, I mean, you talk about a genius. Quincy Jones is that. So that was something that I think I've watched it a couple times now. I've watched that a couple times because it was just so captivating. Of like, well, how do you the things that he hears, like he talks about when he was working on like the Thriller album, you know. So there's just certain stories that I was like, oh, that's so interesting. But again, I'm a music person. So.
Wouldn't you like tell that story? You know, one time I was working on this album, you might know.
Thriller.
Called Thriller. Have you ever heard? No? Okay.
No.
Just me?
But right. You know, what's funny is as he's talking and the shots are of like of him and his family and his grandkids and he's granddad, and they're just at the house, and there's these plaques on the wall.
You have to wonder, though, if, like, that authenticity is because his daughter is producing it, like, because his daughter's the one behind the
mic. Well, I'm sure he and, gave her access that, you know, like, someone outside the family.
I watched this documentary on Ethel Kennedy, and her daughter made the documentary, that's really why. And then, like, she interviews all of her siblings, too, and, like, I don't think this documentary would have been made if your daughter wasn't the one behind the camera.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's what added to the like the intimacy, mm-hmm. the transparency of it. But that's something that I watch lately. But usually when I'm at home, there's music on or I'm editing or, you know, we're just kind of hanging out at home.
Well, I'm reading The Help by Catherine Stockett because it's a I'm using it as, like, sort of an introduction.
Okay.
Because it's very pop culture-y, And I'm working on, it's a research topic I've studied for a while now, because I'm working on my PhD in history.
Oh, wonderful.
And so I'm working on a paper on the unionization of domestic workers.
Okay.
Specifically in the Atlanta area and the National Domestic Workers Union.
Okay.
And so I'm using it's really amazing. And like the fact that like Dorothy Bolden, the woman who formed it, was able to like create this organization that had like 30,000 women in it.
Wow.
And then she was able then to get letters from people all over the South who were like, how do we do this? But then also within the correspondence, it's kind of sad because she's very closed off to like, she's like, I will come help you, but I won't send you anything because she's worried about repercussions. And I'm like, you're saying so much by saying I can't say anything that like the silence is just voluminous.
I love it.
And I love it. All right. Thank you, Robin, for joining us today. I like how I say us, but raise
it. It is my pleasure.
All right.
Yay!
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey guys, it's Allie. So as I wrapped up with Robin, I realized I didn't ask her probably what was the most important question. How does it work? How do you get involved? And really what it is there's two platforms, and she's working on getting even more possibilities available. Right now you can either host a live radio show or you can participate in podcasting, audiobooks, the pre-recorded type sessions. And as they work their way into video, those opportunities will be available too. And so I think it's really important to follow Motor City Women, to see what they're up to listen. They have a very wide variety of episodes and content that are available to stream. I downloaded a couple through iTunes. But I would definitely say check out their social media. And if you have any questions for Robin, you can email her at hello@motorcitywoman.com. And I strongly encourage you to do that. Thanks for listening.